and welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with our game week 36 preview. Just three more game weeks of the season to go. My name is Chris Hopkins, and I am joined by the Jadon Sancho of Borussia Dortmund, my Jadon Sancho of Manchester United. It's Andy Case. He's back. Is he gonna? If Ten Hag was to leave, Andy, would Sancho get another chance at United?
Well, apparently that's what the reporting says, yeah, because it's between the two of them, the beef, right? So if one of them's not there anymore, then the other one has the opportunity to continue, don't they? I'm not sure how I feel about it either way, though, because it's not like Man United. As listeners to this show and you will attest, I will happily be the first to criticise Man United where they deserve criticism. But, like, they're... At the very least, they're equally to blame. If not, I think arguably Sancho is the one to blame for this situation. And so, like, it feels a bit unfair that if it does, I mean, Ten Hag going would be a justified decision. But it would then feel a little unfair that Sancho gets to just like walk back in as though with no repercussion, you know. You can't slag off. I mean, we have multiple direct comparisons of what happened with him within our own team and across other teams. Like it was a slight comment from Ten Hag in a press conference saying that he hadn't trained quite well or quite properly or something, which he said that about multiple other Man United players, and obviously loads of other managers have too. And again, there was a little bit of like lost in translation type vibe going on as well. He was answering like a question. So it wasn't even like a direct criticism sort of thing. And then Sancho's put up a statement on social media like slagging him off, and Ten Hag even to that point hasn't gone, right, look, you're out of the team. He's gone, called him in the office and gone, look, yeah, apologize for the statement to me, and then all good, we'll just leave it in the past. And he's just like Sancho's blunt refusal to apologize. So it's like, yeah, it just feels a bit childish from him and a bit unfair. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm saying that only based on reporting. I guess we don't have the full details, but like, that's what seems to have happened, at least from what's been reported. And that feels like, yeah. Should he be able to come back in like from no repercussion? I don't know. I guess it's not the worst crime in the world.
No, sure. I mean, obviously, as you say, if Ten Hag's out, then yeah, should just be water under the bridge. But yeah, definitely seemed to have his twinkle toes out last night for Dortmund in the Champions League, which will obviously be a really interesting second leg as they face PSG for the chance to be in another Champions League final at Wembley. I think last time they were in the Champions League final, Borussia Dortmund, it was also at Wembley. So yeah, nice little bit of symmetry there potentially. Let's stop talking Champions League, Andy, and let's finally stop talking Man United, because that's all you talk about. That and Ipswich bloody town as well. But yeah, let's start talking about FPL, and indeed we may very well end up talking about Ipswich Town in FPL next season. That'll be enough reason to stop doing this podcast if there ever was one. Obviously, we've got our game week 36 preview, and yeah, not very many game weeks of the season left, so it really is squeaky bum time. Can you secure that mini league, or do you still need to get some differentials in to gain rank? Well, let's listen to this podcast and find out. As always, we start by running down the game week fixtures, and then we'll have a quick chat about this week's talking points. We have a pretty similar radar to game week 35, but we've got some new things to add too. We're going to be trying to catch each other in our honey traps, and then we'll finish, as we always do, with captaincy and a pretty crucial game of who the heck is Stat. Let's start then with those all-important fixtures for game week 36. Your deadline is this Friday night at 6:30 UK time, because we have a Friday night football. It's a big one. Luton hosting Everton. Then on Saturday, lunchtime kickoff is Arsenal versus Bournemouth. Then we've got 3 3 o'clock. They are Brentford versus Fulham, Burnley versus Newcastle, and Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest. Before the tea time kickoff is Manchester City versus Wolves.
Moving on to Sunday, we've got Brighton versus Aston Villa, Chelsea versus West Ham, and Liverpool versus Spurs. And then in a very unusual turn of events, I don't think it's often you get a Friday night football and a Monday night football bookending the weekend. It's Crystal Palace versus Man United.
So not loads to talk about, Andy. Usually we're talking about Champions League rotation at this time of the season, but none of that happening. Obviously, there is only one UK or one English team left in European competition, and that's Aston Villa, who are playing and losing at the moment. And obviously, they'll have their second leg next week, I believe. So yeah, we could see some Villa rotation, but they're not going to be particularly popular as assets in terms of FPL at the minute because they don't double in 37. Tottenham and Chelsea do, and obviously they're playing their second fixture of game week 35 as we're recording. Both relatively injury plagued, so I don't know if they're going to have much scope for rotation either. But I think there is still possibly, Andy, some sort of question marks about strategy. And given that some managers will be, you know, really desperate to take advantage of the double game week in 37, I guess if you can roll this week to give you more flexibility, both financially and in terms of position transfers next week, then maybe that would be advisable. And in which case, you can just skip to further on in this podcast and you won't need to listen to the radar.
Well, I mean, when the radar started, we did consider, didn't we, like, should we have like a sort of buy, sell, keep element to it, in the sense of, like, you know, are we talking not just about people to bring in, but people to avoid, and maybe not even bring anyone in at all, right? So but no, obviously we've stuck with the radar format. However, yeah, you get the potentially two free transfers if you roll one sometimes, right? And this game week, you know, although, as Chris alluded, it does sort of like nullify the value of our beautiful radar a little bit, just screams rolling as a potential strategy. Yeah, I mean, not only because lots of people will be coming off a wild card they've just done in game week 35, so you will hopefully have set yourself up all right for the very next game week as well, but also just because even if you haven't, you might well be thinking having two free transfers in double game week 37 could be useful for like flexing your squad a bit, moving a bit of money around, and even if not that, being able to roll one on to game week 38 afterwards, where, you know, famously, notoriously, because all the kickoffs are at the same time, you get team news about all of the teams. So there's potential opportunities across the league there for bringing players in and out, but also, you know, there's lots more teams on the beach in that game week 38. So you get rotation and youngsters getting a go and people getting rested for cup finals to come later and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, the only two game weeks left, the two that exist after this one, both have very strong upsides for having two free transfers.
Yeah, absolutely. Although game week 38 can just be such carnage that even having two free transfers is very difficult to sometimes know who to bring in unless you do get some last minute team news and indeed listening to those press conferences. I guess another wrinkle, Andy, that we have spoken about with regards to Tottenham, although how they're getting on at the minute doesn't help this, is that there are only four Champions League places for English teams as of next season. So Spurs really do need to finish in the top four. I guess as it stands, they have two games in hand over Aston Villa and are 7 points behind them. I think, you know, if things stay the same, given the match that's going on at the minute, they're going to only have one game in hand and being 7 points behind Villa. But I guess from their point of view, they really do need to kind of go hammer and tongs at trying to pick up some points to make the Champions League. They can't rely on that coefficient and coming fifth. But beyond that, there's not really loads of midweek chatter. And I think you and I are, in some ways, eyes on the Championship instead, right?
Yeah, well, let's not open that Pandora's box, shall we? Otherwise, we could be here a while. But no, I mean, I suppose if it was a different team, maybe this might have a little bit more relevance, like a slightly more defensive team. The implication of this for particularly Spurs, but I guess Villa as well, is that there may be points in the season where they have to come out more because coming fifth doesn't do nothing. You end up in the Europa League, but you don't get Champions League now for that. That's confirmed. It's this, you'll have heard loads in the media about coefficients and potential five Champions League places for England, but that is confirmed not to be the case now, although there will definitely only be four. But obviously Tottenham are quite attacking anyway, right? Play like that dangerous high line as it is. So maybe they'll be even more gung-ho and kamikaze than they usually are, but I guess they're already pretty open anyway.
Yeah, they are indeed. Let's move on then to the radar, Andy, and there is a player this week in the coveted centre, and he is an upgrade from last week's mid-range, so probably not loads to talk about with him, but at this stage Phil Foden, I think, has to be on the centre of our radar. We tend to look for form, good fixtures and good underlying numbers to be the kind of, I guess, the bar for being on the centre of our radar. And this guy I guess, has it in abundance. You know, it's the eye test that isn't always backed up by underlying numbers, but he absolutely has that at the minute. He's reasonably affordable as well for a midfielder, although I guess his price is going up rapidly. 8.4 million, I think, at the time of recording, having been 8.2 last week. And he didn't even play last week because he had a slight illness. I guess the other thing with Foden, Andy, and Man City assets in general is that there is always this threat of Pep Roulette. Obviously, his benching in game week 35 for those managers that had him, you know, was disappointing, especially as there was no hint of it during Guardiola's press conference. But I guess that sort of physical rest, even though he was ill, is probably quite important. And I guess we'd be very hopeful, let's say, of him starting four of City's final four Premier League matches, especially without Champions League to worry about as well. So if he can be rotation proof, which I guess we think he is given his form so far this year, you know, you're kind of going without Phil Foden at this point at your peril, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we highlighted last week underlying numbers being brilliant, which is maybe one thing that he hasn't always had in FPL. We've always think he looks good on the eye and he's pretty productive. And it XG and XA both really good. But yeah, I mean, still second for midfielders for non-penalty expected goals and second for midfielders for expected goal involvement. So yeah, he's 8.4 million. He's been a starter whenever fit for City this season. Obviously illness recently. Hopefully that doesn't take too much of a toll on him, as Chris says. But yeah, another wrinkle really is not just Foden's own like more extra prominence in the team and extra output and stuff, but the fact that usually at this point, at least the last few years, a City have wrapped the title up or nigh on pretty much got there and are in other competitions. So you got double whammy this year of that they're not in the Champions League semi-finals and they are still in a title race. So there's they do have a cup final to come, but at this point that's further away on the horizon, and you know, all guns blazing towards trying to get as many points and having your best players play in those league games. So yeah, given those numbers and Foden's prominence in such a kind of obviously creative like Pep team, he just feels like he could be doing so much damage to your rank if you don't have him in. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was worried about going without him this week. So yeah, that was definitely a sigh of relief and a wipe of the brow when he was listed as ill and not even in City squad on Saturday.
I mean, I don't know if either of us mentioned, you may have done, I can't remember if either of us actually mentioned that also the key fact here, obviously City, one of the teams doubling next game week,
yes,
right?
Course, yeah.
So that's another reason why he's on the centre there. There's five teams, I think it is doubling game week 37. He plays for one of them and that team is the team that's won the title like four out of the last 5 years and they're really good. So centre of the radar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously that double is two away games, but Fulham and Tottenham are. Yeah, I think we're very much advocating bringing him in now, as if you're having Wolves at home in game week 36. Moving then outwards, Andy, to the mid-range, Alexander Isak remains here. 8.3 million, so that's another 0.2 increase since we last did the podcast. Ultimately, still very, very good underlying numbers. And I think this guy is really unfortunate not to be joining Phil Foden in the centre of the radar. And ultimately, the only reason he isn't is Callum Wilson. Callum Wilson being back fit again, either taking minutes off Isak, a player that has historically not played two games in a week, and with Newcastle being one of the other teams that double in 37. But also when Wilson does tend to come off the bench, sometimes it's Isak that sort of drifts out left. So yeah, I guess, and when he does that, his underlying numbers have historically dropped down a bit. So we absolutely love, I guess, Alexander Isak as a centre forward, and you're not having a minutes risk, is absolutely a centre of the radar pick. But that has to be mitigated a little bit by the threat of Callum Wilson either starting or taking minutes or position away from Isak.
Yeah, it does. And we said similar last week, and it's a shame really, because really kind of, I think both of us would love to put him on the centre, like his performances and just his ability in front of goal. There's so few clinical number nines around these days. I think that was what appeals to both of us. I'd just love to have him on the centre there with the fixtures that Newcastle have got and the fact he doubles as well, as I said last week. But unfortunately, the expected minutes our risk is only even greater compared to when we said it last week, because Wilson was back. but last week, but now he has actually played, and I think he played, you know, 25, 30 minutes or whatever in the game. So, it's just that really holding him back, because the second in the game for non-penalty XG and XGI still, which was the case last week, getting goals on penalties when he's on the pitch, brilliant option.
Absolutely. A new player, though, Andy, on the mid-range is Kevin De Bruyne. A player that ultimately has centre of the radar pedigree, but I think given Phil Foden's position there and the fact that he is around £2 million cheaper, it means that it's hard to really elevate KDB much higher than the mid-range. And then equally, you know, he has had his fitness issues. I wonder sort of if KDB's sort of days as a consistent, you know, 90-minute starter week in, week out for Man City are kind of over, and whether his minutes are just going to be continually managed for the rest of his City career. But when he is on the pitch, he's unbelievable. He is, I think I read somewhere that he's got one XGI per 90 in his last six matches. I think if we look at the last four, it's potentially even better. Obviously, a lot of his underlying numbers are assists. They're not goals, but we do also know that ultimately he can score from basically anywhere. So he's one of those that tends to overperform his XG anyway. And unlike Isak and Phil Foden, who I guess to some extent we did question whether they were radar worthy given their ownership being north of 35%, Kevin De Bruyne's ownership is about 16%, I think, at the minute. And a lot of them, you know, given that we're getting that stat from the official game, a lot of them might be zombie teams. I don't know how many active teams Kevin De Bruyne is going to be in. So he could be a really interesting differential, but you've got to pay for it, Andy, haven't you?
Yeah, that's the main thing. 10.5 mil. Obviously, another nailed on starter when fit does get his minutes managed a little bit more nowadays because of the number of injuries and stuff he's had, but so you know, the downside for him is being about 2 mil more than Foden. But since coming back to start, his numbers have been better than Phil Foden's looked better over a longer stretch. But yeah, since De Bruyne back in the team, he's actually kind of better. So yeah, that's in De Bruyne's favour. I suppose we say about Foden that it's often quite even between XA and XG, whereas for KDB, this is historically true as well. It is generally weighted towards XA. And you know, he regularly gets one or two assists in a game, so that's fine if he's getting them, but like, it's not obviously as good as XG. And particularly for midfielders, that's even more of a wrinkle than it is for forwards, because it's a 2-point difference, not just a 1-point difference between a goal and an assist. So yeah, but anyway, he's fifth over the last four games for expected goal involvement, De Bruyne, which is, yeah, significantly better than Foden. But he's actually top for big chances created in that time as well. So yeah, obviously XG and XGI are cumulative, but you could have loads of rubbish chances potentially in that. But and yeah, the point here, I guess, on De Bruyne, as we'd kind of expect, right, he's creating high quality chances more than anyone else as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, looking at my own team, and obviously I wasn't on the recent wild card, so yeah, having to make single transfers to really sort of set myself up for 37, and I do think KDB is maybe that differential to Phil Foden that I can talk myself into, but I have to, you know, I have to take that as a the calculated risk that it is, given Phil Foden's potential for maybe more minutes, and then equally the fact that he is cheaper. And also has higher ownership, therefore more likely to hurt if he does return it, and I do not own him. But yeah, there's something about KDB that's quite appealing at this point. I wonder if I'll end up zigging when everyone else zags. Let's move outwards then to the fringe, Andy, and we've got a pretty similar looking fringe to last week, albeit those Tottenham assets of Pedro Porro and Brennan Johnson are dropping off. Anthony Gordon remains, another return against Sheffield United, 6.3 million now. I guess we've already highlighted two midfielders, Andy, so you know, bringing in another one may be slightly difficult, but at the same time, Anthony Gordon not really having the underlying numbers, but just seems to be a bit of a returns machine at the minute. I saw some sort of commentary or take on FPL Twitter that was, you know, if Anthony Gordon had perhaps scored as many goals as Cole Palmer, he'd maybe be given, or sorry, let me rephrase that. If Cole Palmer hadn't maybe had the season he has, I think we'd maybe be saying that Anthony Gordon was kind of like the best sort of cheap midfield pick this year. And I guess maybe he is flying under the radar a little bit because of how good Cole Palmer has been. At the same time, as we say, no underlying numbers, which makes it a little bit more tricky to get on board with. But obviously Newcastle with that double and are a team that do score quite a lot of goals and create a lot of chances.
Yeah, and he has is I think his we worked out last week that his underlying numbers were kind of a return every other game, which at his price isn't. It's just Palmer's returns and underlings have been outrageous, right? Especially with being on penalties. But for $6 million, getting a return every other game is perfectly like good and helpful. And then particularly when, as I think we said last week, that's the average, and the fixtures they've got coming up are better than average. They had Sheffield United last week. It's Burnley this week, then a double, then Brentford. So yeah, all that's still true, and he's definitely, if you're looking for someone in that type of price range in midfield, yeah, someone you should be considering.
And then City's defenders, I think, is another one that we've got to re-mention. Third best for expected goals conceded so far this season. Obviously, they're all hovering, Andy, around that £5 million mark. I think it's Ake, Akanji and Gvardiol now all £5 million, and then a little bit more for Stones, Walker and Diaz. I guess it's always going to be rotation, Andy, isn't it? But yeah, I guess now is as good a time to get any of them in. And it feels like maybe Kyle Walker is the one that's maybe assured of more minutes, but it's so hard. It's so hard to tell because, yeah, we can never quite get in Pep's head with what he's thinking in terms of how they set up at the back.
No, and again, like we said last week, when there is that risk, we've sort of felt like maybe just lean towards one of the cheaper ones because they probably all get rotated. I guess Walker might get rotated less, but still very much a chance of Rico Lewis or John Stones playing at right back, isn't there, in any one of these games. So, yeah, obviously, if you did play, I think we were saying last week, Gvardiol, and as he was the cheapest, and then he's gone and scored, hasn't he? So I guess that a bit of luck, that worked out well. But yeah, obviously there could be a slight spanner in the works when we go to speak about anyone else who didn't perhaps quite make it to our very oil-rich radar this game week.
Oh, there we go. It's very true. But I guess they are ultimately, Andy, the best teams that double. There are a few players that aren't quite making it onto the radar that are possibly a little bit unfortunate too, albeit there are some fairly good reasons for why not. But yeah, I guess this next segment, Andy, might be a little bit longer than normal. Let's start with your team. Obviously, last week we had Alejandro Garnacho on our kind of anyone else, and this week we're going to have Bruno Fernandes. Better underlying numbers than Kevin De Bruyne, but flagged. And I think if we didn't have that flag, he'd probably have been as high as the mid-range.
Yeah, well, before you'd seen the flag, you were really keen for him being on the radar this week. And even I wouldn't have been 100% against it, because despite Man United not playing well.
Put a percentage on how against it you would have been. That's
not really loads. 20? 20% against it? Yeah. Because he has created and had decent underlying numbers, even when United haven't been playing well recently. So, yeah, and obviously doubles in 37. Third for expected goal involvement in the last six games, which is crazy. Higher, number one for expected assists over the last six games, above Kevin De Bruyne, like we said. And if you combine big chances created with big chances that you have yourself, he's actually top on that metric as well, above Kevin De Bruyne, like we said. But De Bruyne doesn't get quite so many goal opportunities. De Bruyne, Bruno hasn't created as many chances, I think only one or two less. But when you add in, yeah, chances he's had himself, and you look at the big ones, as it's defined, as I think, you know, over a 0.25 or 0.3 XG, something like that is how a big chance is defined, then Bruno's had more than anyone. So, yeah, but that flag basically is the killer. All of these would have been positives for him being on the radar, but not just the flag, but Ten Hag's comments being like, at the moment, it's looking unlikely. And we've heard this plenty with Bruno. He could well play. And Ten Hag did say that in it as much too in the press conference, that Bruno is a warrior, and when it's looked like he's not been able to play before, he has then ended up stepping up and playing. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the pitch, but as using your transfer this week, when there's so much upside for having an extra free transfer next week, it seems risky. We didn't really feel like we could put someone on the radar who was flagged for injury.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the key point. I think we couldn't sort of legitimately or you know, wholeheartedly sort of put him on the radar, even though I guess if he plays, we feel very strongly about him. I guess with the United playing on Monday as well, I guess there is in theory every chance that he's got longer to recover and therefore does make it. But equally, it's kind of your own risk, and it's not something that I think we were kind of willing to hang our hats on. But yeah, I mean, if you think that that's a risk worth taking, then I think Bruno is absolutely a really good option this week. Similarly, in terms of injury, Andy, we've got Stefan Ortega here listed. And obviously, he is, given City defenders are on the fringe of our radar, he is the cheapest way currently into City's defence. And when Ederson left the City ground with his arm in a sling the other day, I think everyone was, or FPL Twitter was quick to point out that Stefan Ortega, the cheapest player in the game, we should hasten to add, might be a very nice replacement given that City have that double game week. The prognosis for Ederson doesn't seem as bad as first feared, and therefore I guess using up a keeper transfer that may well be great in game week 36, but maybe then isn't so worthwhile come the double game week, doesn't really feel worthwhile. And I guess we'll be listening to Pep Guardiola's comments in his press conference, and if there is any clues about the length of Ederson's injury, to see whether we would think that Stefan Ortega is worth it or not. But at the minute, again, exercising quite a lot of caution here.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if there is any sniff that he's going to play the rest of the season, then 3.7 million is an absolute steal for your best way into City's, your most nailed-on way into City's defence. But yeah, unfortunately, the excitement that came at the weekend has been dampened a bit by you know, suggestions that Ederson could be back before the end of the season. So you could sneak a game or two out of Ortega from what we're hearing at the moment, but certainly no guarantees. And then you know, it would be pretty annoying. But I mean, I suppose if you're not thinking of bench boosting and you have another playing keeper, then it's not the worst option at this time. But like, if you are going to bench boost, you could end up with a dead rubber sort of keeper on your bench, not getting any points, and that's not the point of a bench boost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess our final one here, Andy, is Emerson Royale. Obviously, Spurs are conceding a lot of goals and have lost, you know, 2-0 against Chelsea tonight. But I guess last week there was a big question mark over who was going to play left back for Spurs in Destiny Adoghi's absence. That was Ben Davis, and he's also got injured and out for the season. It was Emerson starting tonight, and at 4.3 million, I guess we feel it's maybe worth a shout given they also double in 37, but maybe not yet Liverpool away this game week before their final three matches include two teams that are currently either relegated or in the relegation zone. So maybe a bit more potential for some defensive solidity along with Man City in a double game week.
Yeah, exactly. You've got Burnley obviously as that other game, and then Sheffield United on the last day of the season. So 4.3 million could free you up some money to use elsewhere.
Whizzed through that radar, Andy, which was nice to see. Let's take a quick break, and then when we return, we will be swimming. Oh, no, we won't be swimming against the tide. We'll be trying to catch each other in our honey traps.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back then. So, Honey Trap this week, Andy, but let's review our Honey Traps from last week, which we can finally do. But I think we both ended up not taking each other because we had very similar ones. And I think in the end, neither have really worked out. I think we basically said that a London derby would be the highest scoring game of the game week, and I said a game involving one of the double game week teams would be the highest scoring game of the game week. And I guess in theory, if you'd have told us before that Spurs Arsenal would be 3-2, we'd have been pretty happy. But given Newcastle hammered Sheffield United 5-1, unfortunately that would have been a loss for us both, but I guess, yeah, in theory, we couldn't end up taking each other up anyway. What you got for me this week?
Well, this week, it'd be interesting to see how many of these. It feels like we've done more honey traps this year, but I don't really know why, but yeah, often in the weeks when there's doubles and blanks, that dominates transfers, isn't there? Or maybe it's just a bit more groupthink in FPL these days. So not so many you know, odd moves to swim against. But this one's out of the bank of Andy Case honey traps that you might expect.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit brave as well. Not majorly, just a little bit. Okay. I'll be interested to see what your reaction is, but I am going to suggest that there will be more goals not on Saturday than there are on Saturday in this game week.
More goals not on Saturday. So that's all the games on Sunday and Friday and Monday.
So 5v5. There's five games on Saturday, five games on Saturday.
But I guess you're giving me Arsenal and City and Newcastle.
And Newcastle away at Burnley, exactly. That's why I'm feeling.
And
like
I guess in theory the teams also, you know, okay, they're playing Forest, but you're giving me Sheffield United. The team that's playing Sheffield United rather. I have to say my hunch is to go with it. I guess I don't know what the math would be. I guess it's pretty 50-50. I think I'd be tempted to go with it. You know, if you're giving me the top two teams in the league plus Newcastle away at Burnley, I think I'm gonna have to run with it. And it feels a little bit too difficult to sort of quantify and work out. So yeah, I'll take my hunch, and that's to go with it.
I mean, if you really wanted to, which is not going to happen now, we're in the middle of a show, but we could look at the sort of spreads, I suppose, and try and work out some kind of cumulative spreads for the five respective sets of five. But no, just on a hunch, you'd sort of say, you know, obviously, like as you've highlighted, really, City, Arsenal and Newcastle probably all in for a fair few goals. Obviously, what I'm hoping for here a little bit is I've got Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs playing on Sunday, who can all score goals. Brighton, Villa could end up being a slogfest. Both those teams are happy at scoring goals and conceding them. Luton, Everton and Palace, Man United, frankly, are both games that they could be 0-0 or 3-3 and you wouldn't be surprised, like, either way. So, yeah. I guess I'm just banking on hopefully getting a bit of luck in those ones. And obviously, deliberately knowing there's some bravery in there to try and lure you in for their sweet, sweet honey.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to take that. But yeah, I agree. As you say, some of those games could be fairly low scoring, but equally, you know, it wouldn't shock you if they're not. So yeah, I'm happy to take that. And yeah, even if it's you know, partly in the spirit of the game, but equally, I kind of fancy my chances given the teams that you've given me. So yeah. Happy with that one. I guess mine is similar, I guess, in terms of it's like, in terms of the teams, I guess, ultimately, but it is ultimately an altogether sort of different proposition. And it's related to our radar. So I believe that the king of the game week this week, or whatever it is, the highest scoring player in this game week, will be on our radar. So that gives me Phil Foden, Alexander Isak, Kevin De Bruyne, Anthony Gordon, or any Man City defender. You get the field in a single game week, obviously.
Yeah, the field. But like when we get to our next segment, a very, you know,
of course,
more empty field than usual.
You get Erling Haaland. So
he's a big plus for sure. But outside of him and, you know, his kind of lack of goals, relatively speaking, for him this year, you've got the two next biggest City threats, plus all their defenders.
Yeah.
So there's not really anyone, like maybe a Bernardo, but, you know, basically there's no one in the City team other than Haaland I could really be relying on here. And you could argue the same about Newcastle, frankly. Isak and Gordon, by far their two biggest threats. For, I mean, if they were to get a clean sheet and a defender chipped in with an attacking return, then maybe one of those, I suppose.
I mean, I feel like you see it being Fabian Schär, couldn't you? because he loves it.
But, well, he's injured though, isn't he? So probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yeah, it could be anyone from any of the other teams, right? I guess all it takes is like a Jao Pedro brace against Villa and he's up there. So I guess I've got to take it. These are the ones I hate though, because I don't like going against my instinct or my gut, and my gut's telling me not to take this, but I guess there's just so many players in my favor. I think I've probably got to.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what I've found to be in some ways your weakness. It's like I have to tickle the math. Even though it kind of goes against your gut, and yeah, it's good fun. I mean, I'm just trying to work out roughly how many City players have top scored in any given game week this week, and you know, obviously they're probably more than most teams. Although Cole Palmer's probably got something to say about that, but yeah, you know, I think generally speaking, we would advocate for taking the field on these things, and it makes sense to. But yeah, I think I fancy my chances of maybe keeping my honey. So
yeah, fair enough.
Luring you in. I guess let's move on to captaincy, and obviously this is going to be very related to my honey trap there. But obviously, City at home to Wolves mean that Erling Haaland and I guess Phil Foden and Kevin De Bruyne could be very popular captaincy options. Let's try and dig into this, Andy, a little bit, if you've got any thoughts on this. You know, is Haaland the best City option for the armband this week?
Well, as we would always say, obviously, like press conferences, injuries, etc., to listen out for. I guess if we think he's starting, then yes, just about. I mean, the thing is, hence they're on our radar. We would expect probably returns for Foden and or KDB, right? In a home game against Wolves.
If Haaland wasn't like a 60, 70, 80% owned or whatever he is, then he'd be on the radar too every week, right?
So, well, true. I don't, yeah, there's again, this is like gut, I suppose, over facts or numbers, but I just got a little feeling for old Philly Foden with a, I mean, I know he's been ill, but you know, a little rest there.
Illy Foden.
Hey.
So hey, I mean, Philly. So Haaland is. I mean, for me, this plays into it a little bit, and I'm not saying that I will end up captaining Haaland, but you know, gone are the days where he's 85% owned. He's 62% owned now. And you've got to imagine that the 20 percentage points of managers that don't have him that did earlier in the season are therefore active players. Therefore, you kind of feel like he's a more appealing captaincy option in some respects, because there is an actual benefit to kind of doing it. You will have rank gain if he returns. I guess the reason that his ownership has slumped is because of, you know, relatively for him, bad underlying numbers and a succession of blanks. I guess I kind of don't really know where to come down on that, but you know, I don't think it's the most straightforward decision ultimately. And yes, obviously listening to press conferences is going to be important, but assuming that we get very little out of Pep, I kind of don't know where I'd go this week with those City assets.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, relatively for him, not quite so good numbers, right? He's still second in the game for non-penalty XG in his last six matches, right?
But he was outrageously first all of last year, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I mean. I understand what you're saying relatively for him, but like he's still relatively to every other FPL asset, including the ones you're comparing him to directly here, Foden and KDB, he has better underlying numbers than them. So, We had this a bit with Salah earlier in the season as well, didn't we? And a lot of people have now taken the punt and moved on from him, but he still had decent underlying numbers for most of the season. They have dropped off now, but and you know, we were still advocating for him as captain. So this is a really difficult one, and I suppose when it gets to this stage of the season, maybe it's good that it doesn't seem ridiculous to not go with Haaland, because it gives you opportunities, either if you do go with him or if you don't. I mean, I was very tempted last week to captain Isak, and obviously then that's all well and good when he returns and it seems like a good idea in hindsight, but there's a little temptation for me to do something a little bit different this week. And again, I'm in a different position to you where I've dropped a bit of rank in the last couple of weeks, so I guess it feels a bit more carefree and less protecty. And I think possibly if I'm more protecting rank or protecting first place in a mini league, then maybe I would be inclined to lean Haaland. Yeah,
interesting. I mean, you mentioned him there, Andy, like, you know, if we took the City players out of the equation, then how good an option is Alexander Isak? I guess the question mark, you know, as we mentioned on the radar, is what impact does Callum Wilson have? But ultimately, you know, away at Burnley for a striker in very, very good form for a team that creates a lot of chances, you know, is a really, really good fixture. And I think he probably needs to be spoken about in the same breath as those other four. I think it could be a really, really interesting captaincy decision this week. And, you know, it won't be equally split between those four, but I find it really hard to kind of put anyone off any of them at the minute. And I think Isak's definitely in that conversation.
Well, if we're talking about facts, numbers, right? In terms of Haaland, the bottom line is over the last six matches, Newcastle have created more XG than Man City. It's close, you know, that it's within a sort of tolerance level of variance, you could say. But that, you know, six matches, reasonable sample size that takes that into account. 14 XG in six matches for Newcastle, 13 for Man City. So good numbers for both teams. But yeah, City, Newcastle, you can at least take from that Newcastle are on a par with City at the least for XG creation, and Burnley conceding a lot more than Wolves, who are City's opponent, right? So Newcastle's opponent, 50% more XG conceded in the last six matches by Burnley than by Wolves. And I would probably guess that that's similar across the whole season as well, because Wolves have been okay defensively. So, yeah. But City are at home and Newcastle are away. That's
Newcastle not having the best away form, I don't think, in the league. So maybe that's a concern, but...
That is true, but we know, we've spoken about it a number of times, that style that Company plays at Burnley, and they play a high line, and you could absolutely see Isak getting in, couldn't you? So it's another one that's tempting for me in a week where I feel like I want to be a bit spicy.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and yeah, it'd be really interesting to see where we end up landing. We've got a couple of other choices, Andy, here, and I guess Arsenal assets, if you own them, including Bukayo Saka versus Bournemouth, must be worth a mention. And you've also cheekily put Crystal Palace assets against Man United here, and in brackets, genuinely, as if I wouldn't quite believe you. And I kind of don't, but then equally, you know, we know what United are like. Terribly, terrible underlying defensive numbers, and Palace are scoring goals at the minute. So yeah, I mean, it would be a very left-field captaincy option to go with one of those ahead of any of those City assets and Alexander Isak, but yeah, it's not crazy.
I mean, obviously Isak and the City players, as we've said, have got good fixtures, right? So that is maybe the one thing that we would make it crazy. But in isolation, no team's conceded more XG than Man United over the last six matches. Yes, if you listen to this show, you do hear a lot of moaning about Man United's defence, right? But I wouldn't want the fact of how bad it is at the moment to get lost in the much complaining about them over a long period of time now, because this is bad, really bad as it's ever been, level bad, right?
Is that a Michael Jackson song?
It's bad.
Again, I always find it bizarre that you've done more singing on this podcast than I have, because I don't think that would have been the prediction that when we started this.
Not exactly famous for your singing, though, are you? Like, I mean,
no, but
you wouldn't have expected it out of me, but
I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah. Well, anyway. And dancing, but obviously the listeners don't get to see that. That's just special for you, that one.
Yeah, I'm a lucky boy.
But look, like 14.5 XG in six matches. So like what, two and a half goals a game-ish, like on average over the last six games conceded by Man United. And also you've got to think in the last two games they've played Burnley and Sheffield United. It hasn't been all like tricky fixtures. So yeah, really not good. And Palace have created, particularly at home. They're not very creative overall. I guess we'd have to point that out. They aren't high up at all in the XG table, but have been better at home and have been better since Glasner's come in. And obviously they've only had a few games now with Elise and Eze behind Mateta, in which they have been scoring goals. So you're probably going to go a Newcastle or a City player, but just if you don't have them for whatever reason, or you're going to want to go uber differential to climb up their mini leagues, I think it's on.
Interesting. All right, well, let's leave it there, Andy, and let's finish with a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is Stat. Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe, and the other person has to guess who it is. They get five clues, and if they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points. After the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. Each time they hear a new clue, they've got 2 minutes to stick or twist with their previous guess. So we don't reveal the answers to the end, so you can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. I have two more chances to close the gap. Andy has one more game himself to play, but we're going to give me two in a row to create as much jeopardy, I think, as we can for that final game week, and that will leave us level pegging, or in terms of games. Andy currently leads 36 points to 30, so realistically I need two pretty big scores. I mean, ultimately I need seven to make there kind of any 6 to tie it, I guess, and hope that you get a 0 on the final day to draw. But no one wants a draw in this game, frankly, do they? There is pressure on this, but I guess it will give us, in theory, something to play for at least next week. And if I really bottom out, then the final will be a dead rubber.
Yeah, well, that might be the way to go. We'll have to see how the points go here. Maybe it'd be more exciting the other way, depending on what you score here. But let's see it. I mean, we'll have to think of a tiebreaker situation just in case as well.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe we could save that for one of the end of season review pods, possibly.
Oh, that feels controversial. But anyway, let's cross that bridge when we come to it. We need some big performances out of you first before we get there.
Yeah, so,
Let's begin, as we always should do, with clue number one. And it is this player's fourth season in FPL. They are currently on for their lowest ever finish.
I feel like the 5-pointer might be out the window. Fourth season. So probably not a Luton player. Everton lowest finish could be... I'm trying to think who would even be eligible at Everton. I guess Pickford would be, Branthwaite. I don't think either of them would be on for their lowest finish. So, no. Arsenal assigning someone like a Martinelli, possibly. Could be his fourth year. Wouldn't be a Ben White, I wouldn't have thought. Yeah, I'll stick it with Martinelli, maybe. Bournemouth, I find it unlikely that they've got anyone that is on for a low finish in 4 years. Brentford, I think they're on their third season. Fulham, probably not many eligible for the game. I guess Leno would be. Don't know if he'd be on for his lowest finish. Burnley, I think we can probably discount. Newcastle, 4 years for... No one rings a bell. Sheffield United, I feel we can probably discount, along with Forest. City, 4 years.
You've got 30 seconds.
Diaz, maybe. Or Kanji Stones. Yeah, could be Diaz. Wolves, not sure. Not very far through the teams at the minute.
You've got 10 seconds.
Yeah, I'll go Ruben Diaz, please, Andy.
Okay, time is up. So, yes, you will. Clue number two. This player's price has not changed all season. Who the heck is that?
Okay, well, I think he's 5.5 million. I don't know if he's had ups and downs or not, but I think his current price would be the same as it was at the start of the year. So that scares me that I don't want to go off him. Let's start going through the teams again. Villa, 4 seasons, lowest finish. Could be a Jacob Ramsey. Would he be high enough owned? Don't know if he would. Or John McGinn. What about a defender? Or a keeper? Emi Martinez maybe rings a bell, but he'll have done more than 4 years because of all of the Arsenal years. Chelsea players, they could very easily be on for low scores. Player like a Robert Sanchez, I feel like he might have gone up and down at times this year though. Probably not on for his lowest finish either. West Ham, not sure. What about Man United? 4 seasons. Bruno? No, because he had that half. I feel like he wouldn't be on for his lowest finish. His price must have changed. Although I think he's 8.5 at the moment.
30 seconds to go.
I think he's 8.5. I don't know what he started at, but surely he's gone up and down at some points this year. I'm very tempted to stick. Given I need the points, I think I'm going to stick, Andy, with Ruben Diaz.
10 seconds now. So
yeah, stick, please.
Okay. Clue number three. despite one of the lowest XGC per 90s in the league, he is fairly middle of the road for clean sheets this season, not near the top.
Well, I think given that clue, it would be very unfair for you to do a midfielder or a forward. Could you repeat the clue for me? Sorry.
Yep. Despite one of the lowest XGC per 90s in the league, he's fairly middle of the road for clean sheets this season, not near the top.
Fairly middle of the road for clean sheets. I mean, I don't think City have had loads of clean sheets, and they have had...
I say that for better understanding of the point, right? More so than like me telling you that he's, I don't know, something like 30th or 30th sheets or something.
I get you. City have had reasonable underlying numbers, and it hasn't always turned into two clean sheets. I don't know where he'd rank necessarily, but you know, I guess Arsenal are top, and I feel like Everton are second for clean sheets. So that would imply that, you know, obviously, once you rank those players, you know, Arsenal are going to have four defenders ahead of him, and Everton will have a couple. And then, yeah, trying to think who else. I guess it could be a goalkeeper, and that is the worry. Whether it would be Edison, for example.
You got 30 seconds.
I think, given I know what Diaz's price is, so it wouldn't be Walker because he's moved. It couldn't be Gvardiol because his price has moved. Obviously, it could be Ake or Akanji, and in theory, it could be Edison. Also, it could not be a City player.
You've
but
got
I think
10
it,
seconds left.
I think it works, and I'm going to have to stick Andy, I think, given what I need in terms of points. Stick, please.
And the time, because it's now up. So, clue number four. This player is the seventh highest owned player at his club, where there are 11 players eligible for Who the Heck is Stat?
Well, I guess that makes sense that he could be, but I guess so could any of the other players that I've just mentioned. So other teams that will be, that will have a lot of ownership will probably just be Arsenal and Liverpool. Arsenal would be top for the clean sheet, so that rules them out, really. So it's City or Liverpool, and I think it's a defender or a keeper at this point. I don't think it will be Trent, because his price has changed. I think Robbo's price would have changed. So that leaves Van Dijk, and then it's, and Alisson. And then I guess we've got Edison, I think Akanji, Diaz or Ake. And I guess at this point, unless it's obvious to move off, I've got to stick with Ruben Diaz. You know, seventh seems reasonable, but it could also be any seventh out of 11 for City. You know, sounds reasonable, but it could be any of the others. Frankly, you know, Haaland's top, Foden, KDB will be second, maybe third. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to stick because I need the points, but I think I've narrowed it down to one of like five players. But I think frankly, any of these clues could, in theory, apply to them. So yeah, I'm just going to have to stick.
You've got 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'll stick, mate. Let's get this over and done with, so I can either celebrate wildly or go home crying.
Oh God, that you're describing my Saturday coming up. Clue number five, then. Only one of those six players above him is also a defender, and that's the only one who has more starts than him. Who the heck is Stat?
Which clue number is this? This is clue number five?
This is clue number five, your final clue, yes.
That's a nasty clue number five. Okay, I mean, I don't know how many starts these... I guess that probably rules Van Dijk out, but that's something. I mean, I think we looked at Diaz the other week, and I think he started fewer games than we perhaps think. I guess that would also rule out. Also, that would also rule out Edison. So we're down to Diaz, Akanji, and Ake. I mean, yeah, what's 1 point at this? I mean, I guess it could make the difference, but yeah, I could be sitting on five here, and I'll stick Ruben Diaz.
Still it might not be a minute, just under a minute.
Yeah, I know, but nothing that you've given me. Yeah, I don't know how many games. I guess Ake's been injured at some points this year, so it probably rules him out. But yeah, between him and the Kanji, I don't know. I know that Diaz is 5.5 mil. Whether that's fluctuated or not, I don't know.
30 seconds left now.
Four seasons actually sounds about right. That sounds more right than the Kanji and Ake, actually. So yeah, no, stick. Yeah, stick.
You are sticking. Well, Christopher, Derek, Hopkins. 5 big points when you needed the most. Unbelievable scenes.
Oh, that's outrageous.
Ruben Diaz. Oh, my days. You cannot write this script. The first clue came out and the first words out of your mouth were, there go my 5 points then. And then he goes and picks the guy it is. I don't know why it being Ruben Diaz's fourth season is the first thing that came to your head when you went to Man City. But yeah, that's what it was. And the thing is, as soon as you said it, obviously I know what clues are coming, and I know none of these are taking you off him because they all end up leading towards him, right? And I also want to defend my final clue because you wrongly smeared it. Because you got extra information in that it's definitely a defender.
The
fourth clue pretty much led you to it almost having to be City, because whilst there are like teams like say Arsenal, Liverpool, not like the ownership isn't as spread out as it is at City. To have 11 players eligible for the game really could, maybe you could talk yourself into it being maybe Arsenal as well. But yeah, and then it had to be a defender that's started more than most others for City, because there's only one defender who, that final clue gave you the information that there's only one defender who'd started more than him. So but anyway, you didn't need it because you'd already got it, so it doesn't matter how good or not that clue was. What can you say? An amazing 5 points, to the point now where before this I was thinking, oh, 36-30, I was like, oh, I wasn't able to look at the sheet last week, I've got no idea what my points are, I might have to do a bit of a count back now just to make sure all my points are
Well, that's definitely worth doing, to be fair, because I think sometimes we might forget to update it, but yeah, no, that's huge, that's genuinely huge, and that's made my local elections evening.
I can see it in your face. Again, there's some aspects of this show I just wish people could see, because like the genuine joy on Chris's face when he found out he got that 5-pointer.
It's not even like thinking I might win. It's more just like making it not boring for the listener in the last final weeks. It's all about the
showmanship. Absolute bullshit. I'm calling complete and utter bullshit on that.
It's all about that. It's all about the listener.
Listener, that is bollocks. I think there is a small element of Chris that makes him happy that there's some jeopardy for the listener, but the number one feeling here is that he's happy he's got a chance to win something he's never won in four seasons of doing this show. That's the reality.
Yeah, I mean, look, believe what you want to believe. I'm just here for the listener.
Well, it's exactly this though as well that was before you started, but making me sort of caution the should it be two in a row thing, because I mean, obviously if I go smash out a 5-pointer and then you can't win it in the final week is the danger of me doing it. But other than that, it could lead for a epic will he overtake it on the final day.
Yeah we'll have to think about it. Maybe it'll just come down to who's busier next week. Yeah, maybe we can just we can leave it to that, or frankly, listeners can let us know, Andy, and I guess to bring this one home, if our listeners have any questions, including who should be doing the penultimate Who the Heck Is That of the season, how can they let us know?
Well, they can find us on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. And yes, do let us know. And just to be clear as well, for If we have done the count back correctly, the current score is 36-35 in my favour with just one game left each to play. So couldn't be tighter.
Yeah, could not be tighter. Tighter than two coats of paint. And you know, if you are enjoying Who the Heck Is Stat, plus all of the other wonderful things that Andy and I say on this podcast, then do remember to rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Don't, of course, get caught out by the Friday night deadline this game week. But next week, we will be back with the usual Saturday deadline and plenty to discuss in our final double game week of the season and penultimate game week of the season. So, Andy, until then.
Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.